We have devoted several segments of the exchange to exploring the effectiveness of new approaches to handling sexual assault cases on campus at Southern Oregon University and at the Ashland Police Department. Both SOU and Ashland Police have sent speakers across the country to describe the workings of the programs. That includes a briefing to a congressional committee not long ago from today's guest. More briefings will come later this week when a campus sexual assault response symposium will be held at SOU. Angela Fleischer will lead some of the discussions. She is the person who probably needs two business cards just to fit her title, the Assistant Director for Assistant Director of Student Support and Intervention for Confidential Advising. Angela, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me here.
Good to have you. So this is the Campus at Home program in the campus version of it and the You Have Options program at the Ashland Police.
That's correct.
Essentially the same basic workings?
Yes.
Which are what? I mean, this is really it really puts the mechanisms of handling sexual assault response in the hands of the survivor, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a victim-centered way of responding to sexual assault, and the ultimate goal is to increase reporting. And to increase reporting, you have to remove reporting barriers, and that's the part where the victim-centeredness comes in. And we want those reports. We want those reports to increase so that we're aware of what's happening on our campus and in our community, and ultimately can hold perpetrators accountable.
When you talk about barriers to reporting, what are some of the big ones?
I think some of the big ones are people not understanding processes and feeling like if they come forward, they'll automatically have to talk to law enforcement. They'll be in a process that sort of hijacks their life for a while. I think another thing that we see a lot is that people are assaulted by people they know or loved ones, and that's a huge barrier to reporting. The other thing is just timelines. A lot of the time people aren't ready to report directly after being assaulted and think that if they haven't reported directly after being assaulted that they no longer have the option to do that.
What is the statute of limitations? I mean, how long can a person wait to report?
Well, in terms of legally, there are statutes in when you're talking about child sexual abuse. But when we're talking about adults being sexually assaulted, to my knowledge, there is no statute of limitations. But traditionally, both campuses and law enforcement wouldn't take cases that had happened beyond a certain period of time, and that varies from place to place. So with both You Have Options and Campus Choice, we will take reports regardless of when it happened.
So you're really encouraging people to make sure that they're taking care of their own needs first.
Absolutely. Yeah, because either process, being involved in a campus process or a law enforcement process, really does take a lot of time and energy. And we're working with people who have lives. Sometimes they have children, they're students on campus, obviously. They have jobs, they have other things they're trying to do. And so it's really difficult to navigate a process that takes a lot of time and emotional energy in particular.
So what's the genesis for such programs? I mean, who first said, let's do this differently?
Well, in terms of the You Have Options program, that came out of a, community partnership and a willingness on the police department's side to look at doing police work differently and really working hand in hand with advocacy in a way that law enforcement hadn't done previously. And from that came, what are the barriers to reporting? Why aren't victims coming forward and going and being willing to report to police? And how can we change the way that we practice? And from that came these methodologies of practice, relaxing of timelines, allowing for reporting past an acute period of time. And then when I came to work at SOU, I had been working in the community alongside Ashland Police Department, and I said, okay, there's this great program at the Ashland Police Department. We need to get our response in line with their response. There are some changes that we can make on campus to have a better response, and that will work really well with the Ashland Police Department's response. And gratefully, I have an administration that said, okay, great, let's do it. Yeah.
So is the Campus Choice program a parallel response to you have? Because they're going to end up reporting through the Ashland Police because there's no campus police, right?
Right. It can be parallel and it can be entirely separate because, again, a survivor or a victim has the choice about whether they want to interact with police or not. And so they can choose to engage both the administrative process and the criminal justice process, or they can choose one or the other. And one of the hallmarks of Campus Choice is confidential advising, which is my position here at SOU, which is is there to give people information, clear, accurate information about the administrative process and the criminal justice process. And I can assist them and walk them through a criminal justice process and or the administrative process. So they're not mutually exclusive. They can work in combination with each other and they can be separate as well.
So is the administrative process, is it a disciplinary process? Is it a counseling process? Is it all of the above and more?
Well, they can seek out counseling regardless. They can choose, you know, no action, no option, and seek out counseling or other forms of support. The administrative process involves a Title IX investigation. And one of the things that, again, is important is most employees on a college campus are responsible under Title IX, which means when they hear of a sexual assault, there's a mandatory investigation that has to take place within 60 days, not 60 business days, 60 calendar days. And as you can imagine, that's pretty fast. And we were just talking about how people's lives can be sort of hijacked by a process. And so the administrative process is really that, notifying the university, this has happened on campus, I would like an investigation to take place. And yes, that ends in disciplinary sanctions if the person, the other person, is found responsible. And that can range anywhere from expulsion to more developmentally based sanctions that can come from that.
So does it have to be initiated within 60 days, completed within 60 days?
It has
days?
To be completed within 60 days.
Does this run a bit counter to some of the components of the Campus Choice Program, which is, I mean, if a woman, or I mean, if a person, no matter who it is, male or female, is sexually assaulted and would prefer to hold back a bit, I mean, this kind of runs counter to what Title IX says you have to do, doesn't it?
Right, and that's the reason for confidential advising, to have an administrative person on staff that students or anybody on campus related can go to and get information about the process and really have it be their decision in terms of when they would like to or if they would like to engage the administrative process. Students can also go to the Student Health and Wellness Center to talk about these things.
So do you end up in this sort of island of non-administrative stuff or something that you can take the report through confidential advising, but it does not become a Title IX investigation?
Because by policy, I'm labeled as exempt from Title IX. So yes, I can do that. And I like to think of it as a vestibule to their options.
A place to enter first and then decide which way to turn from there.
Yes.
Angela Fleischer is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She works at Southern Oregon University as the Assistant Director of Student Support and Intervention for Confidential Advising. You just got an idea what confidential advising means. We're talking about the Campus Choice Program, which is a parallel to the Ashland City Police's You Have Options Program. There's a symposium coming up later this week. We'll ask Angela in a few moments what that's about. Join us on the Exchange with your questions, comments, 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Did some of this grow out of the Children's Advocacy Center movement, which changed things up so that kids who were suspected victims of sexual assault were then not taken out of police stations with the fluorescent lights and the hard chairs and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, It just makes sense, right? And it wasn't that we were paralleling exactly what was happening in children advocacy centers, but the practice model is very much the same. And we often talk about how the way that children have begun to be handled by police and investigators really makes sense to handle most people that way when they've experienced trauma. I mean, people are people and they need the same kind of things, a non-intimidating environment, something that is at a slower pace, and that doesn't look like they're being sort of grilled for information.
Because there were a lot of things that I'm sure that felt very, very uncomfortable to the people who were trying to report cases, that, I mean, between the medical and the legal systems.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a subject matter that's, you know, highly unusual to be talked about anyway and can be really uncomfortable. And then you have somebody asking you linear timelines and rapid-fire questioning in an environment that's maybe a little bit less than comfortable or cozy, and I think it's really challenging.
Even for a person who hasn't been involved in something involving sexual assault, is this still a difficult subject to talk about, do you think, for people at large?
Yeah, absolutely. I always say our culture doesn't even talk about wanted sex, right? So to talk about sex that was unwanted and forced is steps beyond that and really hard and uncomfortable for people to talk about.
When you talk to other areas of the country, and you did testify to a Senate subcommittee, was it in December, November?
Yeah, December.
December. So obviously, and this was not the first time that somebody from Ashland had gone to other parts of the country to talk about the things that are going on, both either on campus or in the city system with the U Have Options program. Are you hearing from other departments, other places that are starting up programs like this? Had some of them begun to make moves like this already?
Yeah, we are hearing from a lot of people around the country who have questions and who want to start having something like this. And a lot of campus in particular, they're scrambling to become compliant with Title IX, but also have a model that's victim-centered and doesn't take away all options from their students. And so lots of people are calling around with questions and wanting input and those kinds of things.
This is Title IX from the civil rights legislation in the early 70s, isn't it?
That's correct.
Okay, so yeah. Requiring equal programs for women on college campuses mm-hmm. generally. Is there some effort to rewrite the law, to rework Title IX so that you don't have to go through? Because it's a bit of a maneuver, isn't it, to have you as this, as you put it, vestibule, exempt from Title IX?
Well, I mean, the OCR and Atixa, who's a leading sort of expert about Title IX, both make the recommendations that universities and campuses can designate Title IX exempt employees. And there is the Campus Accountability and Safety Act that is going to go before Congress, which does speak to having a confidential advising position on campuses.
So the symposium coming up for later this week, it looks like it's 10 to 3 on Friday, February 27th, the Campus Sexual Assault Response Symposium. Since you've done so much traveling across the country, is this just for, who's this for really?
This is really intended for our campus and our community to give information about what's going on here, what's special about what's happening here, to talk about our response on campus, to talk about our response in collaboration with law enforcement, and to talk about our education and prevention efforts that are related to this response.
We had a chance to see you on TV in January on ABC's 2020 on a piece about this program and the You Have Options program and showing the workings of it through a case. I mean, that was a rather surprising case in the sense that we got the name. I mean, we had the name and face and everything of the victim, and then also went through the whole process with the perpetrator, which was highly unusual. What did you think about the overall impact of the story and how it portrayed the programs and their workings?
I thought that they did. What I was pleased with was that they were true to how they said they would treat the story, and I think that they handled it well. I wish that they would have said a little bit more about both of the programs and sort of their uniqueness. But overall, I was pleased with the presentation. Of course, they dramatized things up a bit more than what happens in reality, and that was sort of funny to see.
I noticed that. I was surprised that it had been a long time since I'd watched a news magazine on network television, and the editing part of the process really jazzed things up in ways that were unexpected.
Yes.
From somebody who worked as a TV reporter for a long time.
Yes,
okay, I'm glad you got the same impression.
Yeah.
Has your phone and email traffic picked up considerably since that time?
Really, since there was an article written back in October by a reporter for the New York Magazine, and since then, the email and phone traffic has been a lot busier. Mm-hmm. A lot of print material reporters a lot of the time.
Is it mostly from reporters, or is a lot of it coming from campuses and police departments as well?
Both, yeah. Mm-hmm. Really a lot of both.
What's usually the first question that gets asked when somebody from another campus calls you?
The question really is, can you tell me about this? That's the question. Tell me about the elements of this. Will you tell me about what you're doing there? I get a lot of, my boss has asked me to collect information about your program, so will you tell me about it?
Now, is there a prevention component that comes with programs like Campus Choice and You Have Options?
Yeah, we have the Violence Response and Prevention Advocates on campus. And so we have two bodies that meet, and I chair the response one, and Mary Vest of the Women's Resource Center chairs the prevention side. And what we really like to emphasize is that what we learn from the response can inform the prevention. So we can have real-time response technically on our campus in a preventative way when we let what we're hearing of reports come forward and inform how we're preventing. And I think that's the piece that's, again, just a little different than how other campuses are doing things. So we can get anonymous reports. We can get confidential reports from students who don't want to go forward with any kind of investigation through confidential advising. But we can still use the information that they're providing us with to respond on our campus with educational and preventative activities.
Which must put you in an interesting situation sometimes, because there's information that you have that you're not putting out there because it's about a specific case that the victim doesn't want to move on, and yet there are other ways you can use that information to try to work it for other people as prevention.
Right, absolutely. I mean, and one thing that makes that tricky is that that is a sticking point for many campuses, is that there is a person who knows about these activities happening on campus and you're not responding to it when you know about it, right? And sort of the argument to that is that every other person practically on campus is a responsible entity. And if that person or student wanted an investigation, they would have sought out one of those other people. And we wouldn't have the information at all if we didn't provide an opportunity to talk without an investigation.
This is the point at which people's heads begin to blow up.
Yes.
But the point is that by dealing with the situation more softly, giving the options essentially to the victim of the sexual assault, you then encourage more people to eventually deal with it in
yes.
their own time.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And we have the information. So if we learn that a particular party house or a particular, you know, drug or alcohol involvement or whatever is happening on campus, we can do campus-wide education and prevention about that. And it does not identify any one person as a victim of those circumstances. We can just put the information out there and do programming around that. And that's a great power, instead of just the sort of overall general prevention and education that doesn't specifically address things that are happening here on our campus right now.
It sounds like you're getting a lot busier over time, but a lot happier
yes,
about it.
Yes, definitely a lot busier. We've had, in our first term this year, we had as many reports as we had all of last year.
So things are working.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. We'll finish this segment here. Angela Fleischer has been our guest. She's the Assistant Director of Student Support and Intervention for Confidential Advising at Southern Oregon University through the Campus Choice Program. Thanks so much for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
The symposium is in the Rogue River Room at the Stevenson Union at Southern Oregon University, Friday 10 to 3, and it is free. Angela Fleischer, thanks again.